This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Folks, every Monday we're fortunate to have Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, join us. For a long time, we talked about the special programs in response to the pandemic, whether that be PPP, SBA, or any others. Most of those have gone by the wayside, and we've spent a lot of time most recently talking about the economy, inflation, supply chain demands, issues along those lines, and we will continue to do so because those continue to be the pressing issues. Guy Williams, welcome to the show.
Morning, Newell. How are you today?
Doing great. Guy, let's start off with supply chain. I heard a couple of experts over the weekend talking about it. Still in excess of 100 ships offshore of the Los Angeles and Long Beach port. Doesn't seem to be moving much quicker, albeit they're now, coming off of the shopping season. So obviously it will be a little less goods that will be headed this way. But they say, both of them said, we still have a long way to catch up.
We really do. And it's a little more complicated than it first seems. One interesting supply chain tidbit, McDonald's called on a company in California called Flexport to send three 747s to Tokyo filled with potatoes because they had a French fry shortage. They had to quit selling large and medium orders of fries in Japan, and so literally sent three 747s full of potatoes to Tokyo. So it's an interesting challenge across a lot of different things. One of the things that happened is there used to be 30 big shippers. That's consolidated down to seven, and the shippers are more sophisticated. They're managing their fleets and inventories more carefully. So you don't have as many options to ship. But the other thing that's happening is China is going through a new wave of shutdowns. Their approach to coronavirus is to absolutely lock down a city, a province, a port. And so that is really challenging the supply chain for things coming out of China. And a lot of things still come out of China. We really haven't diversified away from China very much. People are trying, but it takes quite a while. So we're facing a China shutdown issue. We're facing shippers that are more constrained and more dry. And then things like commodities. You know, the construction industry is really facing delays. Things like windows, appliances are on back order, and things like hardie board are actually on allocation. You know, you get an allocation and you can use it, and then until you get a new allocation next month, you just don't get any supply. So the supply chain is still constrained. Probably this is going to be a very tough year for a supply chain.
Yeah. I mean, I was in a store the other day just to add to this about how some unusual items, right? So I still decorate my house with Christmas lights, and I like to put it in a 2-gallon Ziploc bag, and I replace the bags every year. So I go to the store. I actually went to 6 different stores. I was on a mission, right, to find the 2-gallon Ziploc bag. No one had it, and they said they hadn't had them for weeks, if not months. They don't know why. They suspect it's part of the supply chain. It's not a priority item. It's not, one that people buy all the time, but not available. And it just kind of strikes you, you know, when you think about it, you're so accustomed to just going to the store, picking up, you know, a couple of boxes of those and going about your business. So I'm now moved into a 1 gallon bag.
Well,
as the story goes.
Yeah. And if you think about not available, you know, we're anxiously waiting the Supreme Court decision on whether we're going to have to do testing for non-vaccinated employees. Good luck buying testing kits, because HR has scouted out. They've talked to wholesalers. They're, you know, on the waiting list. So we're trying to get testing kits, and those are just not available for people if we have to use them. So that supply chain is going to have a real challenge ramping up, particularly depending on which way the Supreme Court rules on mandatory testing for people that aren't vaccinated.
And I guess we will continue to see this reveal itself, the supply chain challenges, in many other different ways. Early on said it was the appliances, mm-hmm. and now I'm hearing, as you said, so many of the other commodity items. When you talk about Hardie Board, that was kind of caught me off guard. I had not heard that, but it doesn't surprise me.
Well, and personal example, we're expanding our office on veterans, and the contractor has said, well, we don't know when we're going to get the windows in. I said, well, didn't you order them? He said, yeah, we ordered them, but they're on back order, and it's a longer delay than we're used to. So this construction project is going to be delayed waiting for windows. So now it's not just appliances. It's also windows. It's also sheetrock. It's also Hardie Board, as you say, and lumber is a challenge also.
Yeah. I mean, where do you think this goes next? I mean, I guess a lot of it is really determinative by China. And I guess it is. Is it a fair criticism to say, you know, why haven't we pivoted away from China? I mean, I think that's something that's going to be more like a decade process than something that happens within months, right?
I mean, it's fair to ask, but realistically, it took a couple decades to get as dependent on China as we were. And one of the things that happened is before COVID, we really had a miraculous supply chain. You could literally invent a product, send prototype designs, and within 90 days have the new product delivered to the United States from China. You know, silly example, but we had a customer that invented a way to drain crawfish pots from the bottom. You know, it's always a big problem. Okay, you do turkey fryers, you do crawfish, and now you've got this hot water or hot oil. You don't want to wait forever to be able to deal with it. Well, they created a way to have a valve at the bottom that was heat sealed, didn't leak. Sent the design over, got it shipped very quickly back from China. So it really was miraculously efficient. It was inexpensive, hard to resist that. And now we're seeing, because of COVID, because of China's different political problems, you really can't rely on one market. But it takes a while. So it'll be a few years to diversify away from China. And it probably makes good economic sense. But it was so easy and so cheap, it was hard to resist.
So also along the supply chain, we have our own supply chain issues, not just with international trade, but just here within our own country, as Omicron is just going across the country, and it's almost not a question of if, but a question of when you get it now. We have a lot of domestic manufacturing plants that are working at a reduced rate today because they just don't have any employees.
Oh, yeah, and that happens everywhere. We see that in the metro area. Our restaurant customers are operating at reduced capacity. We have a restaurant that we're trying to go to, Rosedale, and they said, we're not open today because we have some COVID issues and we just can't open. Now, it's a great Susan Spicer restaurant, but they just couldn't open because of COVID issues. So that's affecting everybody. You know, we've wrestled with it at the bank. I know our friends at other industries are doing the same thing. You shuffle people. You want to keep everybody safe, but at a certain point when you have too many people out, you have to reduce hours or literally close for a few days until you can catch up.
Yeah. So it will be interesting to see the duration. Do you find the messaging from this administration to really be strong on the facts?
I'm gonna say that it has become confusing. I think the interesting thing is CDC sometimes contradicts the administration and vice versa, and they're all part of one group. I think going back,
I was talking on the supply chain.
Oh, supply chain. Okay, I thought you were talking about Omicron.
COVID.
Clear of that. We'll let someone else deal with that question.
I mean, if you can make sense of everything that's coming out, you won't be on this show any longer. You'll be on network news.
Yeah, we're talking about that earlier. It's like the hokey pokey, one foot in, one foot out, turn around right. and get about. Right. But no, supply chain it's really unfortunate because one thing that's being said is, well, meat prices are high because the meat packers are greedy. Now, did they suddenly become greedy when President Biden got elected? They weren't greedy when Trump was there to ignore this. They weren't greedy when Obama was there. They're suddenly greedy. I think there's a little bit of economic, I won't say ignorance, but just a little challenged understanding of economics. You know, when you simultaneously say we want good high-paying jobs, and then you're surprised that those cause prices to go up. I mean, you know, if the workers get paid more, and I want the workers to get paid more, then cost will go up. Same thing with oil and gas. If we want to restrict oil and gas, make it more difficult to explore, you know, reduce pipelines, then gasoline prices will go up. I mean, the two go together. And I think that's more of a distraction play of hoping that the American people will think, well, these aren't the consequences of actions. They're just mean people being greedy. But business people always want to make a profit. They haven't suddenly become greedy this year.
Right. Yeah. Not for sure. I just find just give us the facts, you know, just tell us the truth. We can figure it all out at the end, but everybody's worrying about whether they're consuming political capital or otherwise. It just doesn't make much sense to me because I see this. I think our supply chain issue will be around for another 18 months minimum.
I think so. And you may be optimistic. Hopefully it will end that quickly. I think there was always a statement in the oil field, the cure for high prices is high prices. Because once the price goes up enough, then people stop consuming and people start producing. Right. Well, supply chain, when the price gets high enough, it's worth your while to charter that 747 and send the fries to Tokyo. So it will get solved. You know, Americans are very creative and it'll take a little while, but we'll work through this. But we're going to have higher inflation in the meantime. But it does lead to a comment of there are some things you ought to spend right now.
Such as?
Gift cards.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine for a moment you got a gift card for Christmas. If you're like me, you say, gee, this is great, and we'll go and we'll have a special occasion and we'll use it. And then you move it to another place and you think, well, when will we go use it? Then you move it to another place and finally it gets lost. And then you find it right after the expiration date. Mm-hmm. So what we're suggesting to people is if you got a gift card, first, prices are going up. So restaurant meals are getting more expensive. You know, even coffee at coffee shops is more expensive. Make a resolution to use the gift cards right now. Particularly if they have expiration dates, because a lot of people sit around and they don't realize that it's going to expire, which always seems a little unfair to the consumer. But in an inflationary time, if you have a gift card, man, make a resolution. Use it before Lent. Say, look, this is going to be a pre-Lent resolution. Get rid of them. Not get rid of them, but use them well. Have fun. Take advantage of the fact that you got it, but don't let it get forgotten, which has happened to us with gift cards, where we just forget that we have them, and then you realize too late, oh, I should have used it.
What about credit card advantage points? I'm kind of the mindset, the sooner you use them, the better off you're going to be, because I'm not so sure they're going to be around too much longer.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we've been thinking about this and trying to explain it to customers, which is, if you have frequent flyer miles, if you read the fine print, you don't own those miles. The airlines say this is not an ownership interest. And in an unfortunate case, if you pass away, there's no guarantee that those go to your heirs, because most of the programs say that they belong to the airline. Now, airlines are fairly flexible if you send a gift certificate and a will to transfer them, but they don't have to. The letter of the law in frequent flyer programs is it terminates at death. But one of the things about frequent flyer programs is over time they get less valuable. Airfares go up, availability of seats to use the frequent flyer miles goes down, and so it's really worthwhile if you have those gift points or frequent flyer miles. Absolutely use them right now. Use them as soon as you can, because otherwise it will deteriorate in value. And heaven help you, if you pass away, it may be that they just get lost altogether.
Well, and as a lot of companies are distressed too, that is a balance sheet item, is it not? It's an unfunded accrued liability that they have to account for, because people could cash them in, right?
They do. And one of the ways that you can you have two things. One is what's called breakage. Starbucks records 130 to 140 million a year in income from cards that are never used or that expire. So it's an income item. But second, if you change the program, which the frequent flyer programs allow at the airline's sole discretion, you reduce your liability. So what's happened through the years is you've had airlines change the programs, but almost always it's in their benefit, not in the customer's benefit. So you have to be really careful that you're not saving something that's depreciating in value. And I know a lot of people save their frequent flyer miles, but they're getting less valuable over time.
Yeah, I've never seen it where they make them more lucrative. Not in my lifetime.
I'm waiting for that.
Maybe it happened. I don't know. I might have missed it. I don't think so. I don't think they've made more valuable or more lucrative.
There was a short time after 9/11 when they were more valuable, but that time came and went when nobody was flying. But other than that, you're exactly right. The trend over time is always to reduce the value. And the other thing is, if you end up with just knick-knacky miles with, you know, different airlines, those never get used.
Right. And they're not enough to amount to anything.
No, and there are some options. I mean, one is most airlines allow giving them away. You know, you can give them to the Salvation Army or a different charity. And you might as well, you know, Children's Hospital, just say, you know what, I've got 3,000 miles. That's not worth anything. I'll feel a little better if I get rid of it. But it's a nice organizing principle to say, let me just get rid of these miles and give them to somebody.
Yeah. And if you're planning on getting a refund from the IRS in order to cover some of your bills that may be due, you may not want to take that approach, because the IRS announces today that they are backlogged, significantly backlogged, and they will not be processing these claims as quickly as they have in the past. So that's another byproduct of not only the pandemic, but having labor supply issues and everything else that goes along with it. All right, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Guy, when we come back, let's talk about a little bit about the status of the SBA loans and if there's any changes, improvements, or otherwise in that program. We'll be right back with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Stay with us.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
We're back and we're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, I got a text here. They say, I've been approved for a loan from the SBA. I don't know how they disperse the funds or what the conditions are on that, because it's been like a 3-month process. But I was just curious if you could give me an update information on these loans.
And I assume that's a direct SBA loan. If it is, you're going to have to go back to the SBA. They do have a phone-in number, so you can call them. They're challenged like everybody else in answering the phone quickly. But I would try giving them a call and also emailing them through their SBA portal and saying, okay, what do I need to do next? Because the direct loans don't go through a bank. They're only dispersed by the SBA. And what they normally like to do is send you the documents electronically, have you sign them, and then credit a bank account.
Okay. What is the status? Are they still offering the loans, and is there healthy traffic for these loans?
December 31st was the deadline for the disaster loans, so that time period has come and gone. SBA has been a little bit of a stepchild with this administration. They're not really the focus of recovery efforts anymore, so they're not offering any new programs. They are very flexible, though, on repayment terms. So if your payments are a bit of a challenge, they have been working with a lot of people that we're aware of to reduce the payments, to extend them a bit. So we're seeing a lot of flexibility there. They're also very quickly repaying the PPP loans. So those are almost all repaid by now. There's still maybe 20% of the national PPP loans still outstanding, but the forgiveness has been very rapid.
Why would, under this administration, SBA kind of be a stepchild? That's kind of confusing to me.
Well, I think part of it is SBA works through banks, and we're sort of on the bad list. And, you know, a lot of the people like Elizabeth Warren just think banks are inherently not very helpful. I don't think she appreciates the fact that we're in every local community and able to extend credit, and we really know who needs money and can get it out there very fast. So I think that's the only thing that I can guess. The regular, though, 7A programs to start new businesses, that's actually doing real well. We're seeing a lot of people apply and a fair increase in entrepreneurship of people saying, you know, this is the time. I want to go ahead and start my new business. I've been thinking about it for years and want to go ahead and do it.
If you look at the history, every time that we've done a private-public collaborative with local banks and otherwise, for the most part, it's been a success.
It is. One of the things we're a little bit apprehensive about is something that was proposed but not approved was having the SBA go back to making direct loans. And every time the SBA's tried this, they have absolutely lost their shirt. I mean, it just becomes a disaster. And the challenge is the SBA, because it's a government agency, has a hard time saying no, particularly to constituencies that are politically favored. And it doesn't matter, you know, which side, but, you know, both DNRs want their loans approved. So if the SBA has money for direct loans and you turn down somebody that can appeal to their congressman or senator, it's really difficult for that to be a no. And because they were turned down, probably for a good reason, the SBA then finds itself making loans that have very little chance of being repaid. So we'll see if that happens. But the direct SBA loans have never worked out financially for the agency.
Anything to report on the PPP or EIDL or any changes in any of those programs?
Nothing new there except accelerated approvals. They're paying them. The PPPs are coming back very quickly. EIDLs, they're not looking at making new EIDL loans. That program has sort of run its course. And I'd like to see a different version of that. There is a little bit of movement of taking some of the rental assistance money from communities that didn't use it and sending it to those that used all of their rental assistance. That's a positive thing. City of New Orleans is actually getting some more rental assistance money. Now, it's not an SBA program, but it's just a government responding appropriately to you know, people that need it and people that didn't use it.
And that's because you said earlier that because they had a lot of money left over from other jurisdictions not using those dollars, correct?
Exactly. A lot of the money that was approved last year didn't actually get spent. And we saw that with Katrina. Congress could approve money, but it was a long time before it left Washington, and sometimes it left for things that didn't make any sense. So, you know, we had schools getting money to do, cleaning and sanitizing of surfaces, and, you know, that's wonderful. We want them all to be clean, but it turned out that wasn't really how the virus was spreading. So now they're reallocating money. The rental assistance money went to areas where it wasn't needed, and it was just spread broadly and is now being refocused. So that actually is a good thing.
Yeah. Guy, on another note, have you been following this story in California where they're proposing to double its tax revenue in order to run their Medicare for All program in California, known as CalCare?
Yeah, California is an interesting example. They have an awful lot of money. The government is really in a surplus situation, but they find ways to spend it. And it is intriguing how ineffectively they could spend money. I mean, they literally spend hundreds of million dollars not solving the homeless problem in California. And yet their solution is always, well, let's spend more money. They're looking at doing a state free medical care program. And unfortunately, I think that as helpful as it would be to have a better medical program, their history has been of spending the money unwisely. And because California is beginning to fill up with an awful lot of people that need free medical care, it's going to be a real challenge for their budget. So not surprised that they're doing it, and not surprised that they're raising taxes, because that is the way they're going. It's pushed a lot of businesses out of California.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are staggering. I mean, and it's going to be interesting to see how this ultimately works. I was shocked when I was reading a series of articles over the weekend about it. It's like, where did this come from? I mean, I knew they were talking about it, but I didn't realize they were actually putting things in legislative proposals already. Let's go to the talk lines. We have Carl on the line for you. Carl, you're on with Guy Williams.
Hello, Guy. How are y'all doing today?
Doing well.
I'm calling because I applied for an SBA loan. Second time, I lost my home again in Ida. In going through the process, the gentleman explained to my wife and I that being that we have really excellent credit, we have to pay the higher interest rate due to the fact that we can go anywhere to get a loan. So it seems to me that I'm being penalized for trying to keep my credit up and doing the right thing by paying my bills. Those that don't pay their bills, and I know it for a fact because my wife talked to a gentleman that also applied for an SBA loan. He has, in his words, crappy credit, and he's getting the lower rate. Can you kind of explain the thought process on that and why it's you're punishing people for doing their just thing to do by paying a bill?
I can explain it and try and rationalize it, but I'll tell you do it. The thought process, when do we, being the SBA, are going to use the money to help the people that need it the most, who have the most credit problems, the most financial challenges in their life? The thought being that people that didn't pay their bills didn't pay it because they had other financial challenges, and therefore we don't want to compound their existing trouble by charging them a higher rate. Now, I don't happen to agree with that logic because, you know, we've been in this business, customers that are very poor but pay perfectly. you know, the ability to pay your bills is not necessarily related to income. I mean, income, of course, makes a difference, but a lot of it is willingness. And I would not reward people who were unwilling to pay on time and created a problem. But government agencies sometimes do that, and they end up disproportionately rewarding people who made bad decisions, and people that made good decisions get penalized. I'd still encourage you, for goodness sake, keep your credit up. It makes a difference in everything you do. You know, you don't want to be in a situation where you're in terrible shape in order to get more government assistance.
Well, that kind of explains it, but it seems like that the good get punished for the bad. And that's in those conversations all the time with crime and so forth. So, I mean, I don't justify it, like you say, but I just think it's a terrible way to treat someone that this is the second time, like I said, I've had it.
Yeah, because it's not like you haven't been paying taxes your entire life, right?
I wouldn't know about that. No, but yes.
Exactly. Carl, thank you so much for the call. I apologize. We've got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Give us a shout, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He'll take your questions. We have Jeff. Jeff, you're on with Guy.
Good afternoon, Sheriff.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, sir. I had one quick question for Guy Williams. I'm not sure if he has this information or not, but after I ask it, I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio.
Okay.
Mr. Williams, do you have any idea what's going on right now with United States Postal Service delays? And I'll hang up and listen, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Guy?
Jeff, U.S. Postal Service is having the same problem that every other employer is having, in that some of their workers have been out. And so we used to have really remarkable mail service here in the metro area, just 1 or 2 day delivery. That has stretched out to 4 to 5. And one of the more unfortunate things is, we also had, fortunately, the sheriff's office in Jefferson caught them. We had a crook in Jefferson Parish working for the sheriff's office, opening mail and taking checks out. So Postal Service is a little short of workers. They've had a couple of workers that were dishonest that had to be let go, thank goodness, and on their way to prison. So it should be solved, we hope, within about 90 days. But, yeah, it's definitely a little slower than it used to be.
Do you find, Guy, many people missing the payment deadlines because of the mail service? I know I see that. I'm still one of those that mails some of my bills in, and you know, I'm having to make the move finally. stepping into this century because, you know, it's just not working out well.
Understand, but you know, it's free. You don't have to put a stamp on those online payments.
I understand. I got it.
We're seeing a little bit of that, and we're trying to work with people. And I think most of the local banks are doing the same. You're seeing a delayed postmark, but yeah, it's not like it was after Hurricane Katrina where the mail was hit or miss, but it's definitely slower than it used to be.
Yeah. Guy, in the close, in the last couple of minutes that we have here, what are small business owners? You interact with them all the time. That's why I love talking with you. You really stay engaged with your client base. What are they telling you, and what are they feeling?
They're actually encouraged that the city is going to have Mardi Gras, and I mean the city. It's the whole metro area.
Right.
I think most leaders have realized shutdowns seemed like a good idea at the time, but they didn't stop the spread. So it's better to get vaccinated, be a little careful, but let's keep the economy rolling. They're seeing good reservations. Their challenge is they're having to raise prices, which the consumers hate. So particularly people that are in the barbecue and the meat-oriented businesses, boy, the prices are just going up. And, you know, consumers hate to see higher and higher prices for things. And then the labor shortage is still real. We are still seeing that across every single one of our businesses.
Yeah, it's I walk into the grocery one day and it's fully stocked, and 2 days later, shelves are empty. And you ask the manager, says, we can't rely on a stable delivery right now. We don't know what we're getting and when we're getting it. In fact, we got to the, many of them have said, we even just stop asking because there are no answers.
Yeah, and there's certain items that you might have liked and you look for, and they're just not there anymore. So that's going to be an ongoing challenge until we get the supply chain untangled.
Absolutely. Well, guys, this hour flew by yet again, as always. We really appreciate your time and your insight, and have a great week, my friend.
Oh, you're very welcome. Good to talk to you.
All right, it's Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, folks. Scoots up next on Manic Monday. We'll check in with him to see what he has coming up next right after the break. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWO.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.